Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. The Q stands for question, the Force stands for force, and when we talk about our A's, we are talking about answers and nothing else. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Navsock, and I'm enjoying your breakdown of every letter that we use here at Four Center. I think it's important. We always talk about the Y's. This is the Y.
I'm bordering on doing a Sesame Street episode. This podcast is sponsored by Q's.
Sesame Street and Muppet Show, highly influential in my life. So yes.
Exactly. This episode is actually brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we're continuing to recommend Padawan by Kirsten White. Big news on this book is that Ken has physically moved it into his bedroom. So we both might be reading it soon. The physical book being in your bedroom isn't going to make a difference for me, but you're escalating the situation. So I might read soon. If you want to listen instead, in whatever room you want to be in, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Any other book details we should know, Ken?
Other than books are good, you should read them more, kids. All kinds.
I heartily agree with that. Heartily agree. And with that, we're going to get to our cues. We have, as always, two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We are going first to Twitter and Brandon Smith. Brandon says, "Hey, friends, why do you think some people struggled with seeing Luke defeated and hopeless in The Last Jedi, but celebrated and adored seeing Obi-Wan with that mindset during his television series?" This is a really fun question. I'm going to start with a sub question from Brandon's, Ken. I kind of felt like when the Kenobi show was rolling out, there were definitely some people who were maybe not on board with it, but there was a lot of, I felt, excitement and a lot of people enjoying it. And now since Andor had come out, I feel like there's a little bit more negativity about Obi-Wan. What is your temperature on people's general opinion of the Obi-Wan series?
I think there's a lot of hypocrites in the world, Brandon. Is that what you want to hear? Because that's what I know. Next question. It is the nature of things. It's unfortunate that it's the nature of things. Some people, Kenobi, God, I love Kenobi. Warts and all. And it's got some warts.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. But what's at the core is this story. And kind of to Brandon's question, right? It is a Jedi who's lost his way. And I think generally it was well received, but you got some bad faith memes going around, kind of, and Obi-Wan wasn't even a Jedi. But I get it. I at least try to get to the core of where that's coming from. It's kind of fun to watch heroes at the top of their game. I get that. I personally, though, enjoy diving a little deeper there, but, and in terms of, I mean, you and I could be here for hours trying to figure out why people can't just say that is for me. This is not a society that everything must be debated, ranked, even though we have fun doing some rankings here. It's a different vibe. Yeah. And it's at work. And that factors into Last Jedi too.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think I know some of the reasons for people having a challenge or a dislike with Kenobi. I think it was made pretty clear from the get-go that the story would be what Brandon is discussing, this is somebody who doesn't consider themselves a Jedi at the beginning. And I really feel like the show is structured around his journey back to becoming a Jedi again. What does being a Jedi mean to him? And how is he going to act that out? And how is he going to make up for the times that he felt he lost his way? So that's the warts and all, as you said, that's what I really loved about the Kenobi show, as well as Little Leia and all sorts of other things. Insight into Vader. But to Brandon's question, I really think that even though they are similar stories and some great Star Wars poetry of both Obi-Wan and Luke losing their way, being literally kind of separated from the rest of the galaxy, I think it tells us just so much about the way we as a culture process story, right? And one of the big things to me is just narrative order. If you start with the first Star Wars film, A New Hope, we were introduced to Obi-Wan as someone who had probably had a hard time on Tatooine, right? He didn't look like he was living the high life, right? He was somebody who was just waiting and watching. And when the call for help finally came, he said, "Sure, I'll go, but I'm too old for this, and I need the young one to come with me." Mm-hmm. That's the way we were introduced to him. His story in the prequels probably only reinforced that, right? That's the journey we went on with Obi-Wan. He ended in emotional defeat, heading to Tatooine. Mm-hmm. Whereas, in contrast, so many people, regardless of age, grow up with Luke Skywalker, maybe project themselves onto Luke Skywalker. So many fans have years of passionate connection to his stories and books and comics from, Legends Expanded Universe. And I have not read all those stories at all. But, obviously Luke had some challenges, some ups and downs. He lost a Skywalker to the dark side in those stories, too, but generally persevered, right? Yeah. So I think it is, just totally about narrative order. Obi-Wan the possibility that Obi-Wan was broken and hopeless on Tatooine for a while was always a possibility in people's minds, where it was, I think, a shock to some people's system that he was in The Last Jedi.
It's very rare that I just want to say what he said and move on. but I'm looking at my notes. I do have notes, kids, here. You kind of took, you know, we're in the same mindset and explained it so well. I think it starts for me. The difference here is, to your question, Brennan, Kenobi was adrift in the desert for 19 years, and that was just part of it. And we always try to make sure we leave our generational perspective and bias at the door when we're having these discussions, but we are of the generation that grew up with, hey, that old guy seems to have been through some stuff, as you said there. Look at his robe. It's got like holes in it. Like, so the fact that we'd get a story in going into that period was always something I would have wanted, but I didn't need the story, but just like, yeah, this is exactly kind of the details change, but it's kind of what I would thought about Kenobi. And for many, Luke, he's higher on the depth chart of characters. Not that the Kenobi doesn't have his fans. Clearly you're a Kenobi fan through and through, and the Clone Wars prequel era, so many people love Kenobi without a doubt, but Luke, I think, is just ranked a little higher, and the expectations are going to be really high, particularly in 2015 and 2017. Let's not forget 2015, Luke on a hill was a big, I love that ending. I love that choice. Even if we did lose, yay, the big three together, blah, blah, yeah, that's a conversation we can have. You and I have brought that up before, but it was just like, whoa. And then, you know, ignite the green, Steel Saunders, that was his podcast hashtag for so long. Theories in green. I was there too. I wanted it. And it was, you said shock to the system. I think that's a nice way to describe some of the reactions to it. Right. And I think, by the way, that's okay. I don't think anyone listening, if you're like still kind of like, man, I wanted him to grab the saber, run down the hill, and I wanted my hero Luke to be there. I don't think that's a wrong desire. Mm-mm. Seeing Luke, as Brandon describes it, defeated and hopeless was hard for folks. And that's okay. And it's okay that you have that opinion, and it's okay that it did that to you. I think both things could be valuable. People just waited. And I think, yeah, I get it. It's on a bigger scale that they saw Luke in this way.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if you weren't invested or even knew of the existence of lots of Luke Skywalker stories in Legends and EU books, right? If you just saw Return of the Jedi at really any age, and then you said, okay, and then he restarted the Jedi Order and he went on all these great adventures and he proved himself, and that, you know, it's hard. It's hard to see him that way. And for me, even I think early Force Center episodes, I was like, I hope he's on the island to kind of do something proactive. Like, he's separated himself, but he's working on something, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to let go of that. And I think, he ended up being the hero that I wanted him to be. He came back to hope and, you know, learn some new lessons and relearn some old lessons all within The Last Jedi. So I ended up, you know, more satisfied than, you know, some other viewers. So I understand that. I think the other thing for me is it's about expectation, right? Like we're talking about, but it's also about just like vicarious emotional journey. It's so important to remember that stories are not information. They're emotions, right? Information is how stories are told, how plots are told. But the stories are about emotion. And think about the difference between what broke Obi-Wan and what broke Luke. Especially if you like the prequels and like the Clone Wars animated series, we went through the pain that broke Obi-Wan with him. We were there with him on Mustafar. We were there with him when he kind of somehow deep in his soul knew what he was going to see on those holo recordings. And Yoda certainly did in Revenge of the Sith. Like, don't turn it on. Don't turn it on. We were there with him being heartbroken with devastated Anakin burning on the shore of Mustafar, having to turn away in pain and disgust, right? In contrast, we were told, we were given the information about Luke's pain. We see some literal flashes of it in The Last Jedi, in The Force Awakens, but it's mostly quick backstory. We didn't go through that. We didn't live vicariously through that. I think the response to Luke in Last Jedi might have been different if the sequel trilogy was structured differently. If The Force Awakens, you know, begins and Ben is still on the light side, and over the course of The Force Awakens, he falls and he deserts Luke and burns. And that's, we walk through that story with Luke. I think people would be much more open to receiving Luke's pain because we would have experienced it with him. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. it should have been done that way necessarily, because I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of good reasons that they started the sequel era story when they did. But I just think it's fascinating to think about the difference between being given information and emotionally experiencing it by walking through the story with the character.
Been working with you for 8 years now, sir. I think that was one of my favorite little insightful moments that you put out there, because it's just so simple, right? When you think about it, but that's sometimes the best stuff. Even what we always say, what we do here, we just often are pointing at the screen and going, hey, that's what's going on. That's there. I think you're right. I think the mystery of it, the wanting to know, and therefore maybe it makes it easier for you to not understand why Luke's in that way. I think that is very much a lot of the conversation. So I remember back in 2017, right?
Yeah.
And Kenobi just makes a little bit more sense of we experienced with him. We were there on those shores at Mustafar. We got it. This one, I don't know. I think again, I think it's fair to wonder, well, why is he this way? And I'd like to know. Could you please tell me? That's totally fair.
And it isn't that Last Jedi doesn't show us, but it does in this Rashomon way internally. You know, there's the flash in The Force Awakens where he's not looking happy. You know, we don't fully see his face, but, you know, the metal hand on R2, is the stuff burns, you know. It is there, but it's not as deep.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Any other thoughts on our favorite bummed out Jedi?
No, I like bummed out Jedi because I like them coming back. Who doesn't like a comeback story, man? Come on.
Yeah, please. I'm easy to please. Give me a middle-aged person who has been broken and then returns to hope. I love it every time.
Yeah. Well, and my true final thought on it is too, is I get how it works differently for our people. Like, we're all different. Mm-hmm. We want different things out of stories. I am intrigued by, it's more real to see this in my unreal fantasies. And I always say this, like, in a lot of things, the big Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, whatever, like, I like learning from characters when they do bad things or make mistakes. And not everyone does, and not everyone comes to this stuff for that. So I have to make sure I understand it's just my own desire to be like, oh yeah, they failed. What can I take from that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. What can I, you know, learn from that, or just experience, hey, somebody else made some mistakes too. So that's the beginning of maybe understanding or forgiving myself, you know?
Yeah.
I have never lost a Jedi Padawan, but I'm sure I've done. I'm sure I've had similar failures.
I've lost podcast Padawans, but.
All right. We could discuss that, but instead we're going to get back to Star Wars. We're going to move on to our next question. From Luce Stahler. That is my attempt to pronounce. I apologize if it is incorrect. Luce says, curious about how the Mortis God's stone tablets got to Luthen's artsy shop. At this time, they're on Lothal in the Jedi Temple. Ken, where do you go with this one?
I want to make sure I'm respectful of the question. I had this kind of reaction of, because they put them there. Because it was a visual dictionary thing. But I love challenging myself to try to answer in story. This is why I love this question here. And I'll say this. It's been a bit since I've watched that particular Rebels episode or that series of episodes. So I don't remember all the answers. I haven't gone through even the wikis in a while. So I apologize for that. So there's two thoughts to me that came to me. That there's another way to Mortis or in the temple. Those aren't the only stones. More stones than we know. They could be from somewhere else. Now, I do believe, I trust Alex Damon and his videos and anyone else who made the videos. I do believe there was the Mortis Godstone tablets. I've seen the videos, but Luthen didn't say that. It could have been something else. You know, it could have been Mortis 2 or, you know, Jedha Prime. We don't know. And then my other thought, and I'll pitch it back to you here. Well, I don't know. Maybe Luthen put them back. We don't know the end of that story yet, because we still got a couple years to that particular time frame in Rebels. And I do believe, the stones or the tablets, it all might have been there for a while. You get that sense. You know, maybe he snuck back in while the Empire was looking. And
maybe Minister Hayden comes to the shop.
Oh, that's even better.
He's charmed, Hayden. Minister Hayden.
Can we get Malcolm McDowell and or season two? I'm interested in those stones. And Luthen's like, oh, no, no, they're not for sale. And he's got to go put them back.
I want a whole sitcom set in that shop. And the title of the sitcom can just be the name of his shop, Galactic Antiquities and Objects of Interest. Yes. And it has a laugh track. No, this is a really, really fun question. I think this is fascinating because, like, even in some of the great videos, you know, use the comparisons to images from the World Between Worlds episode mm-hmm. to kind of verify, like, yep, that looks like those hands. Yep, let's compare and contrast. Yep, it is. So totally understand where this is question's coming from in that, yep, on the timeline in Andor, we're before the events of World Between Worlds episodes of Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can use that comparison from Rebels to identify the objects in Luthen's shop. But my first thought would just be the Mortis gods are depicted many places, and these are very similar stones from a different source. From, you know, a temple. Is this an artifact that the Jedi had? He's got some Jedi stuff in there. Are they from an entirely different temple? Are they some other, you know, explorer long ago found, Force-sensitive explorer found their way to Mortis and brought them back from Mortis itself? You know, did they appear to someone in a village in a vision? And they chiseled them out. Like, in a way, it's kind of exciting to me that they aren't necessarily the exact same stones from Lothal. They look very, very similar, but the Mortis gods are, you know, powerful enough and influential enough that they would be depicted multiple places throughout the galaxy.
Yeah, right. That makes some sense. Maybe these are the Bendu stones. We don't know.
Yeah. Or my other idea, Ken, that you kind of touched on, which is much more wonky and confusing and just fodder for great debate. Maybe when the temple collapsed in the World Between Worlds episode and things shattered, they didn't actually fully seal the portal and some things went back through time. So these are the stones from Lothal, but they somehow went back in time and just ended up on in Luthen's lap.
Oh, man, that's the World Between World wizardry, and I love that idea.
Yeah, I also just like the image that valuable stone tablets would just suddenly fall from the sky and Luthen wouldn't know where, and they would actually hit him literally in the lap.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get these answers from Luthen, but I would love just supplemental footage in character, in story of him going around explaining everything in that shop.
Yeah, he's very aware of with those antiquities. He is totally, totally aware of the deep history of the Jedi is what I think. I think he's not like, oh, what are these? Right. Everything in there that we can identify has some tie to people that were most likely treated poorly by the Empire. So the fact that he has Jedi artifacts and Jedi lore just kind of right out there for sensitive lore, I'm so curious what Luthen's opinion of the Jedi and their history is.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. All right. Great question. We are going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our cues from our patrons on Patreon back in a moment.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back to take more cues of the Force. We go to our patron on Patreon, Graham Gaskill. Graham says, "Hey, Force Center, I hope you are well and that you're living your best pulpy cereal adventure lives." For fun, Graham has spelled cereal like the breakfast food beloved by Cyril Karn in Andor. Graham continues, "I was hoping to get your take on something I've been stewing on for a bit now with the debut of Andor and its distinct look and feel. It made me wonder about the other types of television presentation styles, both past and present, that Lucasfilm could adapt into telling different Star Wars stories. I know I've heard y'all mention how awesome a Ken Burns style documentary on, say, the Battle of Jakku would be, and I couldn't agree more. Although there'd better be Hollow Letters Home to Ma. Are there any other kinds of presentation formats you'd like to see done? For me, I'd love to see the return of the made-for-TV movie. Think The Day After, but on Alderaan. A 70s-style cop drama, Starsky and Hutch, Kojak, SWAT, and an hour-long family comedy drama on board the Halcyon that recreates shot-for-shot different Love Boat episodes. And yes, as you can tell by my ideas, I am that old. Thank you for all that you do for us, and I still can't believe y'all aren't working for the story group yet. May the Force be with you." That is a great question, Graham. We understand all your references. And thank you for the kind words. Ken, where do you go with this?
It would never be in my future to work for the story group, so I appreciate the sentiment, but I don't want to move to San Francisco. Thank you. No, I'm sorry. Actually, now a lot of them are down here in Burbank. Great idea, great thought. I love this. Love this. And the doc thing, the Ken Burns thing, but you can find some Ken Burns style doc parodies of Star Wars online. I found one. It's okay. I would like a little bit bigger swing at it, but I do love that. I'm such a fan of docs. I think a lot of people are. Docs are doing pretty good, especially on streaming services, all kinds of docs. I'm partial to, I love the pop culture ones, but sports or rock doc style is great. And I'm talking about in universe as best you can. Now, the problem is that does border on straight parody. It'd be very hard. But I think you could find a way to do it. Andor has introduced morning news into Star Wars, which we always kind of knew existed, but we got to see it. There's reporters. I could see that there's some hollow docu filmmakers out there in the galaxy. I think it would be interesting. It would be a one-off for me. It's not something that, it would be canon. I think it would need to be canon. Not what I'm suggesting for it to be outside of that, but it would be potentially jarring, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how many people would love that. Maybe just me when I'm on the road doing comedy at 1 a.m. Oh, good. A doc's on. It's time to watch this. I don't know. That's where I'll start. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say to the dock thing, like, obviously, you know, you could do it, you know, like a Lego style thing or with a different animation that's like, it's not strictly canon and you could have fun with a kind of parody, right? Like Lego does.
Yes.
Or I think you could do a doc where you finally get into on screen the idea that there are journalists in Star Wars. They're in the books and comics a ton.
Yeah. And
I think it would almost have to be like Andor, where you really veer away from parody and you take it seriously, right?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, a reporter is embedded with a group of extremely dangerous bounty hunters who are even more dangerous than the reporter realized, right? And, like, mm-hmm. you take it seriously and make a documentary, create a different visual language. And this is how documentaries, holo docs, are filmed in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's possible. Yeah. And Disney Plus is perfect for this kind of stuff. A little lower mm-hmm. pressure for the project. You could just put it up there, have it exist, and do what it needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some other styles for you?
Go to two of my favorite kind of styles. And I will say this. I think over the years, 20 years on, they've been played with enough to where the style maybe isn't as popular, maybe isn't as fresh. But also, as was said in this comment by Graham, I am old as well. And even things that are brand new to me are actually old. I am a big fan of The Office, but particularly the British UK Office. I don't mean to sound snooty when I say that. I enjoy the American one as well. But I wouldn't you love seeing that played real, like you're saying, and doesn't necessarily need to be comedy, but a little docu style as well. I understand that. With the Bureau of Standards, like... You know, Cyril Karn's Day at the Office type of vibe there. Make it a one-off. Again, it's almost like I'm pitching a doc all over again, but just have it actually as a television show, a series. Maybe we do that. 6 episodes of him. I could just only imagine him in the confession room, how the unintentional and intentional comedy gold that might come out of it, especially if you have that for a mom.
He is, while being incredibly terrifying, also very funny, Cyril Karn. And yeah, yes. That UK Office is very funny, but also terrifying.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. In a lot of ways. Yeah. So that'd be there. And then a similar vibe. Again, it is shot without knowledge of the camera. I'm a big fan of Curb Enthusiasm, which is crazy. 22 years on. And again, talk about a style that, strictly outlined, but improv based show shot, in a non-traditional way, at least back in the day. It's still going strong. Whether or not people out there love Larry David or not, or anything about it, I'm a grump. So I love grumpy stuff, which is why you do a Kirby Enthusiasm style with something we already kind of pitched in this episode, Luthen and his shop. Just him running a shop and running a rebellion. Imagine doing Andor, but doing it this way. It's the story of every beat you got going on in Andor. You just do it as a grumpy man struggling to fit in this world comedy with Luthen. Clay would be great. I think Mon Mothma coming in there. I could, it's an alternate universe of comedy for the serious subject, but I could be down for it.
Yeah, I could see some real Arrested Development vibes with Luthen, right? Because, like, Arrested Development, I really like the first 2 seasons. Later stuff gets a little wonky for me. And obviously some people involved with Arrested Development have had some issues. I'll leave it at that. But I really liked, especially early on, how, you know, like, the things that were kind of happening to them were serious, like going to prison. You know, and I can really see... like dark comedy of Luthen, like trying to balance, like, I need to deliver this antiquity to this senator, but I also need to deliver this bit of information to this rebel informant. And camera zooms in on Luthen saying, oh, I've made a terrible mistake.
Bum, bum, bum,
yeah. Those are great picks. A couple styles for me that I would be really interested in is just hardcore noir. Star Wars has, you know, borrowed from so many genres, celebrated so many genres, and, you know, a lot of us talk about the Attack of the Clones noir influence, particularly in Obi-Wan Kenobi's journey, everything from kind of the thematic stuff to going to Dexter Jetster, the person on the ground in the know, which is very Raymond Chandler, very Philip Marlowe. to the rain slicked environment of Camino, all these things, some of the specific lighting choices. I haven't got a chance to read it, but I know Daniel Jose Older's five-issue High Republic series, it features a couple of detective Jedi investigators, and I've been told that that has a great noir vibe. I haven't had a chance to read that myself yet. So it's there in Star Wars, but I would love to go all in the way Graham is asking, like stylistically, of like, this looks and feels like a Humphrey Bogart film.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
shoot it black and white.
Shoot it black and white. You know, I had a film studies professor who kind of was like, you know how to make a noir, right? Take the third light out. That's it. Yeah. So there's shadows. That's it. He's a little bit of a snarky professor, but I learned a lot. But yeah, I would love that. There's plenty to investigate in any era of Star Wars, and I would love that. And you know, some of those themes of like, I always like it. I always want Star Wars to come back to hope, but I'm fine if it gets really dark you get back to the hope. And that's what's motivating a lot of noir stories is not just the lighting. It's people who are having really real bad doubts about humanity being worthwhile.
Yeah. I think the noir thing played straight and played, you know, direct in its style, whether you shoot in black, white or otherwise, I don't know. It's almost after Andor, it's very realistic to me that something like that could happen now.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it would have been before, but before it was always kind of, well, hey, Star Wars influenced by Western. Maybe we'll get a Western, but really it still comes out as very Star Wars. You know, Mando is a great example of that. But to actually just be like, we're doing this. And I'm more open to it than I would have been before. And it just seems more possible.
Yeah. It's not a reference. It's not a flavor. We're going all in. Yeah. Along those lines, another one that I'd be really interested in is horror. There continue to be, you know, discussions about a Star Wars horror movie and what would that look like. The MCU just did that Werewolf by Night special. Mm-hmm. That had a couple things. It had the made for TV movie vibe that Graham's talking about. It has a fun little, this is a special presentation for people who grew up 70s, 80s, 90s and remember that kind of thing coming on before a movie played on television. And then it's very, very influenced in aesthetic from the Universal horror movies. I've been watching some of the Hammer horror films produced in the UK. I I've been saying, I got Dooku fever. I got Christopher Lee fever. I've been reading that autobiography that is a part of the influence of Count Dooku, Christopher Lee being famous for playing Count Dracula. But I recently, like in last month, I've watched Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee in their Frankenstein film, their Dracula film, and their The Mummy film. Mm. And it's just this... for people who know Hammer, they're like, yes, Joseph, we know. Really getting to experience it. It's really gothic horror. Some of it was like a little too graphic at the time, but it's nothing to us today.
Yeah,
that feels like the right way to do horror. It's almost a little bit, it's more in the colors, it's more lurid. Like there are definitely some like dark shadowy stuff, but there's a lot of just like bright red and, you know, glaring orange contrasted with really dark colors. So there's this visual language to it. And the horror is really like there are some monster shots, there's some murder and all that. But it's much more about like the people who are making these bad choices that are leading to monstrous things. So I would love that, like a Hammer horror film, Star Wars horror film.
It seems like it's in the DNA for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely there. And final one for me, I would love some sort of. Buddy comedy road movie, like, you know, Midnight Run, Blues Brothers kind of vibe.
Totally. Oh, yeah. The continuing adventures of Han and Chewie. But yeah. Yes. I'm totally new to.
Yep. That would be great. Any final thoughts on this one, Ken?
While we're talking, I was like, oh, here's a TV genre thing I would love to see. But then I realized we kind of already did have that. A game show. An in-story game show. Then I was like, oh, wait. I love Jedi Temple Challenge with Kelleran Beck. Yeah. But yeah, you could, I could see that. Play around with that again. Bring me back Jedi Temple Challenge with even more gusto to it and make it completely in story.
Love it. And make a kid's version and an adult's version.
You know, ain't wrong. You ain't wrong.
We had so much fun watching and discussing that in the bleak summer of 2020. It was a nice light.
It was.
All right, we're going to move on to our final question from Lightspeed Bear. Lightspeed says, "Hey, Force Center, hope you're all doing well. You often talk about Star Wars being a buffet. People can either pick and choose what they want to consume, or in my case, eat so much the owners ask you to leave."
Fair enough.
My question is more of a personal one. I'm curious which parts of modern-day Star Wars buffet you yourselves have enjoyed the most. As we approach 10 years since the Disney acquisition, I thought it might be a good time to reflect on all the great content we've gotten in that time. What have you enjoyed most from both a thoughtful standpoint and also from a gee whiz, that was cool? For me personally, I have loved almost all of it, but I'd probably put Rebels top of my list. The camaraderie and chemistry of the Ghost Crew made me fall in love with that show. The sequel trilogy, Solo and Mando, are all a very close second. Love to hear what struck the biggest chord with you all. Thanks and keep up the great work. Thank you, Lightspeed Bear. That is a very fun question. Ken, on our recent news show, we looked back a little bit on the 10th anniversary of the sale and some of the great creative victories, in our opinion, since then. Where do you go with this? How do you, in the buffet, how do you rank personally? Not for a YouTube video, but in your soul, how do you decide what to eat first at the Star Wars buffet?
Yeah, here. All right. So I'm going to take it and actually take it to describing it in a buffet. Maybe you did this as well, sir. I have a lot of experience going to Sizzler, to the salad bar, which is it's not just salad, kids. It's a full meal experience. I used to do a podcast called Hot Sizzler Nights. I had to stop for two reasons. One, Sizzler started closing in L.A. There's only one left. It's like far away, or one or two where they're far away from me. Two, my guests would get ill. So. Well, there's a correlation
during the podcast or the next morning.
There is a great episode with Christian Rubacaba and Cody Hall of the Wangers. And I took them across the street and I would take everyone over there. I'd treat them to the salad bar and I'd come back and I'd talk about their choices. It's just a general comedy food conversation. Halfway through the episode, Cody Hall was leaning up against my wall, holding his stomach. And we finished the episode and then he was about to go. Now I had facilities. He could have used my facilities. He was like, I got to go. He lived like 2 hours away. He lives in like the Inland Empire. Talk about LA geographical talk there. And I said, okay, cool. Do you guys have time to do my 5 extra minutes Patreon show? And he just went, oh, and he powered through and did it. And that was a lot. I was like, I can't kill my guests anymore. I can't. But it's an experience. So in that regard, this is what I did in trying to rank it and trying to explain it. The salad, which you still go to a salad bar to get the salad, that's a starter unless you load up your salad, right? In traditional meal settings, the salad is part of the starters. So I put Kenobi, and I'll say currently Andor. You could throw in Mando, Book of Boba Fett. Live action TV, I guess for me, is something that is right now, it is the big thing we've got. But it's like, this is great. I love this. I still want to go to the movies. I still want to sit in the theater. I still want it to rock my senses all around me while I sit there and experience it. So I love these. I eat them, and sometimes I just eat salad, and I'm just eating this salad right now. But I'm ready to go with the main course, and the main course is the movies. Talking about how it hit you and affected you, the movies going back to 2015. And not to, I could easily just say all of them, but to get a little more specific, I was changed by The Last Jedi, both in how I watch Star Wars, how I talk about Star Wars, how I want to engage and talk about Star Wars, who I don't engage to talk about Star Wars with anymore. I was absolutely changed by that movie. And then I was thrilled by Solo. I still stand by that movie in so many ways. And it was unexpected. And you know, there's, we get to that Solo conversation, but I still come out of that. I still go back to that meal. That is sometimes the meal, the comfort meal, right? When you're like, what do I want to eat tonight? Solo. I want to have Solo on my main course salad bar trip here. And then I was challenged and inspired by Rise of Skywalker. It's still the most inspirational movie experience for me as a Star Wars fan in this modern era. That's not for everybody. That's for me. And then quickly here, so I don't dominate this joke here. The dessert is specific novels. When you go back and get the ice cream cup at Sizzler, it's a great experience. You've had a wonderful meal and you're going to go back for more. Rebel Rising, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Light of the Jedi, Shadow of the Sith, Lords of the Sith back in the day, but Paulus Kemp. One of those things where you're like, man, I love Star Wars. I just had a great meal. And I also get to enjoy this. And then the final thing, the take-home leftovers. When you ask the person in front, can I get a box for this? It's Battlefront 2. 2017. Storyvide and Versio and the story mode. I still play it. I still Twitch stream it on the other side. It's still fun. I took it home. Star Wars fills me up in so many ways, but then when I want, I can open up the leftover box and take a bite out of Battlefront 2.
That is absolutely amazing. I'm getting so damn hungry.
Yes.
It's almost lunchtime as we record. That's really great. And I so agree with a lot of your selections. The reason why, the food sounds delicious. I think for me, I so struggle with just listing entire movies or television shows like that's my absolute favorite, right? Mm-hmm. I think I can't remember if I told this story on the air. I was at an event with some old friends of my wife's and that I've now been old friends with for, you know, over a decade. And there people knew that I did this Star Wars podcast and they just kind of casually asked, what's your favorite movie? And I was just like, I don't do favorites. and I came on too strong, like, oh, okay. and I had to explain, like, you know, sometimes when you're in this the discourse world, saying something's your favorite, people take as an insult to something else, and that's mm-hmm. just not the way I feel.
Yeah.
So I approach this buffet question by grabbing the bits and pieces out of different movies and shows of things that, like, just hit me the hardest, either emotionally or just, oh, I love that. It just is the gee whiz that Lightspeed Bear is talking about. I wasn't prepared for your amazing actual buffet, so I'm try to catch up. So
no, it sounds like you're picking for my meals. I like this. Can I try this? Can I have this? I like it.
Exactly. Great. Exactly. Yeah. So we started in a similar place. Like, if I'm going to a buffet and it's available, the first thing I'm going to get is some mac and cheese.
Yes.
That's not a side to me, especially if it's like a gourmet. There are, you know, like four cheeses in there and some of them are a little different and exotic. Right. that's being ladled into the center of the plate as a main dish. And my gourmet mac and cheese of the last 10 years of Star Wars is Luke's third act in The Last Jedi. His I love everything that's necessary to build to it, of seeing how he's broken, why he's broken, seeing all of these effective moments that, like, bring him a step closer and a step closer. And the realization that he says he wants to burn it down, but he can't, you know, in that Yoda scene, Yoda has to, you know, fulfill it for him to burn down the tree. Right. Yeah. That hope was always there. And I love all that, but that final appearance on Crait, the look of Luke, literally, physically, the certainty that he will not be the Last Jedi, the certainty that he is making a difference, he is standing up, but in a way that works for him. And then just seeing that look on his face when he's looking off into the twin suns for the next adventure of becoming one with the Force. That's my mac and cheese.
that's a heavy dose, a heavy ladling, and it's a great choice.
Yeah. Now I can't make myself sick with cheese, so I need a little something to balance it out. So I'm going to get a cut of meat or any sort of, like, if it's, I trust the veggie substitute for the fake meat to be good, something to balance that. I am going to get myself from the buffet a sampling of the arc of Han's cheek touch.
Yes.
The scene in The Force Awakens where he tries to get through to his son and it doesn't work then, but he pays it forward in the way that scene in Rise of Skywalker with Ben's memory of his father, and that his father loved him no matter what and gave him the strength to make the better choice. We've talked about it a lot, so I don't need to go on. That's a nice fine cut of meat. And then, you know, some vegetables that I try that I'm not sure about. I'm a little picky on vegetables, but I end up being like, these vegetables have amazing spice. This is great. I didn't expect it. The movie Solo in general, but in particular, I'm going to go to Kira.
Yeah.
Kira was a real triumph. I was not expecting. Let's meet the love of Han's life before he met the real love of his life in Leia. And speaking of noir, that she's kind of coded as a femme fatale, but the movie gives us all of the reasons that she would have a different perspective, and she makes such interesting choices, and she's so well played. I love Kira. Oh, big victory for me. Yeah. And then need a little drink. So I think something that is maybe like a sparkling cocktail that's got some like life and energy to it, but it's still serious. That's Ray's theme musically. That's one of the great creative triumphs of this era to me is just Ray's theme.
Yep.
And then I'm going to go for dessert in my very balanced meal. I'm going to get two desserts. One is vanilla ice cream. And that is the way I'm describing chapter 9 of The Mandalorian, the first episode of season 2, The Marshal. The Marshal might be one of my biggest gee whiz moments. I was so happy that The Mandalorian was back. I loved getting to spend a lot more time with the Tuskens. I love just dealing with the great dragon big on screen. I kind of couldn't believe they did Cobb Vanth. I loved that performance. And then it ended all of it with, yep, Boba Fett is back. And I had such a hard time sleeping. I almost just like woke my wife to just be like, yeah, Boba Fett. It was a great moment. And Boba Fett with just mystery. Like, what's he doing? Why has he got all that Tusken accoutrement? What's going on? The other dessert is something very new. By the time we release this episode, it will be out. But the Sith Lord chapter in Tales of the Jedi, that's a big piece of cherry pie that I could watch again and again.
Yeah. 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 Ooh, that's a good one. That's an absolute good one.
Yep. And then, hey, I love your idea of putting a little bit more on your plate to take home. And I'll take home the Obi-Wan versus Vader final battle in the Kenobi show. That was also both meaningful and gee whiz.
Absolutely. Ah, love that.
Yeah.
Great stuff. This 10 years on, it's crazy we're 10 years on this sale. There's so much stuff to look back on. I love this. This is a great question.
There's so much. And, you know, I love you including, was Battlefront 2 your take-home dish?
That's my take-home. It's my take-home. Yeah.
That gave me a lot of hours of fun and joy as well. All right. Great question, Lightspeed Bear. Any other thoughts on Star Wars or food, Ken?
Definitely more common, but I'll stop myself because I'm hungry as well.
Excellent. We do indeed have some new submissions for Power of the Light Side. This is something we offer to our patrons on Patreon to post something just positive and joyful about Star Wars that they want to celebrate. We all know that sometimes the algorithm can reward the dark side of not just healthy criticism, but framing your healthy criticism as anger. And we like to do what we can to celebrate the light side. And this is one of the ways we can do it with a segment called Power of the Light Side, literally. This comes to us from Stephen Campbell. Stephen says, hello, Force Center. For my Power of the Light Side, I would like to highlight you two, Ken and Joseph, specifically with helping me be proud of being a Star Wars fan. Now, I'm going to stop here for a second, Ken. Just when I read this first sentence, I was like, ooh, I don't know if I feel bad about, you know, sharing this of like, here's the light side. Us, you know, it felt I had to struggle with it, but then reading the rest of Stephen's great post, it's really, really powerful. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm one of my goals in life in this era is just to of my own life is to accept nice words when they're said about me because I've spent a lifetime pushing them away.
Yeah, I understand. All right. So here is the rest of what Steven has to say. For context, I was born in 1992 and first experienced Star Wars through the special editions at the ripe age of 4. I instantly fell in love. After that, I was a Star Wars character for every Halloween, always asked for Star Wars stuff for Christmas and birthdays, and watched the VHSs on repeat. While a sixth grader in 2005, when Revenge of the Sith was releasing, I did a book report on the film's junior novelization written by Patricia C. Reed. I created an entire diorama of the duel on Mustafar using my newly acquired 3¾-inch Anakin and Obi-Wan figures. I was so proud of what I had created. After completing my presentation, my teacher said, "Live long and prosper," and told me to sit down.
Oof.
The other students in the class laughed, and I then decided to bury my love of Star Wars in order to avoid future embarrassment. When the Disney acquisition of Lucasfilm happened, I was excited but still reserved, not wanting to be mocked. Knowing I had an admiration for Star Wars, my girlfriend at the time, now wife, even bought me a Star Wars Jedi Training Academy shirt that I was afraid to wear unless it was covered with a sweatshirt. I saw and really enjoyed all the Disney-era films, but still had some reservation about being open about being a Star Wars fan, especially with the fandom's discourse. Fast forward to 2020, when I learned about Force Center and followed both of your affection for the franchise. I especially took notice of Ken's consistent wearing of an Imperial, now Rebel, insignia hat, and Joseph's continuing tales of purchasing new action figures. As I'm ready to turn 30 next month and have my own child, I reflect on that terrible sixth grade teacher for mocking me for something I loved. As you both accomplished so well, we should celebrate what brings each other joy and share in that happiness. You have both opened my eyes to embracing one's fandom and being uniquely myself. I now have a baseball cap with the Jedi Order insignia that I regularly wear, thanks to Ken, and I have new 3¾ figures going up on display, thanks to Joseph. I'm also happy to say that I proudly wear the shirt my wife bought me all those years ago. Thank you for all your positivity in helping me once again see the light side. That is amazing. Just a huge thank you, Stephen, for the kind thoughts and for sharing this. I got to get my thoughts and my emotions together, Ken. So what's your reaction?
I really love hearing it. And it's something that I think anyone listening has probably experienced at one point or the other. And look, we're in a better era for loving this nerd kind of stuff. It's not all perfect at all. And there's a lot of problems out there. So it's always going to be a challenge. And it's even like 92, like that seems young to me, Stephen. You're a young man with a wild future in front of you. But man, even then, it was a different time, and I'm sure this story was repeated over and over and over again around many schools or organizations or playgrounds, whatever you want to say. So I feel you, and I'm glad you pushed through it. I'm glad we had a small part in that as well, both of our ongoing adventures, Jennifer as well, and. And it's also a reminder too, you know, Joseph, we made a reference earlier, we've been doing this now, it's like our 8th broadcast season, come up on our 9th broadcast season, but been doing this since 2015. Seems like yesterday, but it's a long time. I love hearing that Stephen joined us in 2020, during a different time, and that more people can hop on board this Force Center train here, not just for us as a business or a podcast, but for the community. And the community around us is very strong. We always say it's because of you all listening. This is a shared experience, and I'm glad you're wearing that shirt. Glad you're wearing that hat. Glad you're buying those figures like us. Don't run into the toy aisle first thing before you even get the food you need. So great stuff, Stephen.
Yeah, absolutely. Powerful. I have such empathy and compassion for that experience, right? That's an awful thing for a teacher to say. You know, it powers some of my strong opinions that there is great depth to Star Wars, but Star Wars is also fun and it fires people's imaginations, and there's nothing wrong with that. And for, you know, an adult to kind of, you know, look down their nose at your silly space thing is just that's that teacher's problem.
Yeah.
Wrestle with their own dark side. And I am thrilled that Stephen, you found your way back to hope. I really relate to hearing that you have a supportive partner who supports your love. I'm thrilled to hear that. I'm thrilled to hear about the shirt, about the hat, about the figures. This is all great. And like Ken said, we're very happy to be any part of you being able to express your love and joy of this saga that we all love.
Indeed. Indeed.
All right, Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
I do indeed. We are the Force Center podcast feed. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center and patreon.com/Force Center. It's where you can support us. From there, you can get into our Discord server where you can celebrate Star Wars with Force Center friends. You can support me if you want. Follow me at Ken Napsok, or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Comedy dates forthcoming. Also, I'll be in my hometown, Central Coast, California, on November 4th and 5th, part of the Central Coast Film Society Entertainment Expo. I'll be up there speaking about building your fandoms and online followings and shows and communities. So very timely Power of Light Side entry, Stephen. So I'll be up there. All information on my website. Joseph, you.
Yeah, I thought for just a second there you were going to stop at, you can support me if you want, and which is a valid thing to just say.
Yes.
You don't need to list websites, just you can support me if you want. We can all support each other. Check out all those great things that Ken is doing for myself. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as at Joseph Scrimshaw, all those social media places. I am doing a renewed vigorous support of my Patreon and creating more short films and comedy bits and my Obsessed podcast all on my YouTube channel. So if you'd like to support me, you can check out patreon.com/Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can go to my YouTube channel. Just Google Joseph Scrimshaw. If all goes as planned, I'm going to take a risk by saying this on this broadcast that we're pre-recording. By the time this episode comes out, I will have released a short film that I made on my phone on YouTube that is featuring myself, featuring Ken, and featuring our buddy Mark Ellis. That that short film is called Peace Fight, so check that out on YouTube. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for all the Star Wars shirts we all want to wear, this has been Cues of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.